Key Economic Releases Affecting Fixed Income Yields. Insights into Sectors Influencing Fixed Income Securities. How AAM plans to capitalize on these themes for your fixed income portfolio. The Portfolio Fix is a podcast series featuring members of AAM's investment and portfolio management team. We will discuss the timely issues affecting the fixed income investments of our insurance clients.
Welcome to another episode of the Portfolio Fix, a podcast series from AAM. My name is Patrick McGeever, and I'm a member of AAM's investment team. Today, as usual, I'll be speaking with Marco Bravo, who will discuss what's driving the move in 10-year yields and the recent CPI release. And then I'll be joined by Andy Bolin, who will update us on the electric vehicle transition that is about to kick into high gear here in the U.S. So welcome, Marco.
Thanks, Pat.
What's up with Treasury yields? We've had some really strong economic data in recent weeks, yet yields have been declining now for most of April. So what do you make of it?
Yes, it is a little bit of a head scratcher as to why Treasury yields have moved lower in the face of stronger economic data. So let me offer up a few reasons why this may have happened. First, it feels like investors may be buying into the Fed stance that the near-term projected rise in inflation will be temporary, and that by the end of 2021, you know, inflation should be running at around the 2% level. If this scenario holds, then there's no reason why the Fed will take any action anytime soon with respect to monetary policy. So perhaps fears of a sooner than later beginning of tapering of their purchases may be pushed out a little bit.
Okay.
Secondly, although we're expecting, you know, 6% plus GDP growth this year, really strong growth, that GDP should slow going into 2022 as kind of one-time boosts from fiscal aid checks and pent-up demand from consumers begin to fade. And then third, you know, we saw the yield differential between U.S. Treasury yields and yields on debt from other developed markets had risen recently. So for example, the difference between the yield between U.S. and German 10-year government bonds rose to a one-year high of 205 basis points as of March 31st. And since then, that spread has narrowed to about 183 basis points as the rally here in the U.S. has outperformed other developed markets. So this may be a sign that capital began to flow into the U.S. As foreign investors are out there searching for yield,
okay,
driving our rates lower.
That's one of the points you made in our last podcast, right? That the attractiveness of U.S. yields would limit how much further upside there was in yields here in the U.S.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, I have to say, the COVID-related influences, the fiscal and monetary actions, and Chairman Powell's new Fed policies making economic analysis even more challenging than usual right now. So what do you think of last week's CPI release? Did it set off any alarm bells for you or confirm any of your expectation? The market seems to be taking it in stride so far.
Good question. So if we look at the headline number, CPI Consumer Price Index for March, it was up 0.6%. That was the largest single monthly increase in almost 9 years. So that kind of caught our attention for sure. Looking a little deeper, the increase was largely led by higher energy prices. The gas index rose by over 9% in March. And so that accounted for nearly half of the overall increase. When we think about what the Fed, you know, it's primarily focused on, yes, they look at overall price index, but they're really focused on core, which exclude the more volatile energy and food sectors. So looking at core CPI, that index was up 0.3% for the month, a little bit more subdued than overall CPI, but it was slightly above expectations. And we're starting to see an increase in prices for services such as hotel, transportation, recreation, which is really being driven by the reopening of the economy. So there's questions as, again, are these increase in prices temporary or will they linger? And looking at it on a year-over-year basis, to your point earlier about making it challenging with COVID to really understand what the data is telling us, you look at overall CPI year-over-year was up 2.6%, strong number, and that number is expected to go higher. We need to keep in mind that these figures are being distorted by kind of strong base effects due to weakness in prices that we saw a year ago as the economy was being forced to shut down. So we expect these base effects in the coming months to push inflation higher. But as we kind of get back towards the back end of the year, we expect year-over-year numbers to be trending back to the 2% level.
Okay, Marco. So we think that inflation will be at a more normalized level towards the back half of the year. That's comforting. Thanks for your thoughts on these topics, and we'll speak with you during our next podcast.
Great. Thanks, Pat.
Yeah, thanks. Next up is Andy Bullen, who will speak to us about the electric vehicle transition that is taking place. So welcome, Andy.
Thank you, Pat.
Andy is a senior corporate credit analyst who is responsible for a number of our industrial sectors as well as utilities. He recently joined AAM and brings with him more than 20 years of fixed income investment experience in both investment grade and high yield markets. So, Andy, this is a rapidly developing space. Maybe we can put some numbers on the marketplace. How many cars are sold annually? How many of those cars are electric vehicles? And what is your expectation for the next 5 or 10 years?
It definitely is changing rapidly. And in the U.S., we, obviously 2020 was an off year for for all sales numbers. But generally in the U.S., you can think about a market of 16 to 17 million cars, globally closer to 70 million. And electric vehicles are obviously still a really small part of that, small single digit percentage. But that is rapidly changing. And we've seen that so far this year, where even in the U.S., the penetration rate is now almost doubled, but it's still low at 2.4%, but increasingly increasing faster year over year.
Okay. And then, so you said adoption rate here in the U.S. is about a little over 2%. How does that compare with Europe and China? And do you expect that to change much over the next 5 or 10 years?
That's a great question. That's really the main part of the story here. Penetration rate in Europe is over 6%. And obviously Norway gets a lot of attention because they're getting pretty close to 100%. That's a small market, but great example. In China, you're close to 8% already so far this year. So U.S. is definitely trailing Europe and China in this regard, but you can see they're well further along the path than we are, and it's only accelerating from here. I think the telling part will be when we get more choice involved. Over the next couple of years, you're getting a lot of exciting vehicles being launched. GM's launching the Hummer. You got Porsche. You got BMW. You got Mercedes. There's a lot of vehicles coming in, the really exciting vehicles coming out in the next year or two.
Okay.
And I think that's really gonna accelerate.
So, other than having new options available, are there any other items that are contributing to the higher adoption rate? Do you think EV is a superior technology to internal combustion engines? Is it a cost issue? Is it a regulatory issue? Or is it some combination of all those?
Really is a cost and performance issue. On the cost side, battery technologies are rapidly declining in cost. Right now, we're at about estimates are about $125 a kilowatt hour, and most people put about $100 a kilowatt hour as the break even point with internal combustion engines, and we really should hit that probably in 2022 or 2023, and at that point, the cost of the vehicle, the costs that are in both vehicles, internal combustion and electric vehicles, really become the deciding factor. And obviously the extras that you have in a vehicle, how expensive a vehicle, you know, a lot of people don't want to buy just the cheapest vehicle that they can find. So until we have all the amenities and the price comparison is there, that's really the point we should hit in by 2022 or 2023. So then after that, it's really in most cases, the performance of an EV actually is superior to an internal combustion engine. And so once we hit that price point where you get a choice, you decide which vehicle, like you get a choice between an electric vehicle and a internal combustion engine, the choice becomes pretty compelling that you'll go with the electric vehicle.
Okay.
But right now, the choice is not there for most people. And I think that's the next hurdle that needs to be overcome.
Okay. You mentioned lithium batteries, and maybe you can spend a minute talking to us about the charging capabilities of those batteries, because I think that's one thing that many consumers seem to get hung up on. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, which is kind of funny because, you know, in a sense, you don't need a full battery any more than you need a full tank of gas. And I don't know about you, but I know very few people who keep their gas tanks full all the time. So so really for 90-95% of the use of a vehicle, you're going to be home charging before you have an issue of your battery running low. And then on top, and so, but on the longer term, longer trips, you know, Tesla has their supercharger out there, and we're getting up to 250 kilowatt. Now there's some 350 kilowatts chargers out there that can really charge a standard electric vehicle in single digit minutes, five to 10 minutes.
Okay.
That's really, you know, when you're talking about longer hauls, what's more important, what's most important to people. But that's to have that a nationwide network of that. We're still probably a year or two away, but it's growing rapidly.
Okay.
And you definitely have it.
Yeah, you're right. My wife yelled at me this morning about leaving the car with an empty tank of gas, so I can relate to that very well.
And in a sense, it'd be easier, right? Because instead of one of you having to make a trip to the gas station, you just plug it in when you get home, and you don't even think about it. So,
yep, I could see it being much more convenient once the technology is readily available, for sure. Everybody's aware of the success that Tesla has had with electric vehicles. What can you tell us about the traditional OEMs? Are their efforts similar or different to Tesla? What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it that they were kind of asleep at the wheel, so to speak, as Tesla grabbed the lion's share of the electrical vehicle market. But I think at this point, they've all finally woken up, and over the, particularly over the last second half of 2020, you get a lot more aggressive plans from all the OEMs, and I think they're all on board now. GM, and that's not to say they haven't been experimenting with EVs for a while. So obviously GM's had a lot of programs going, but I think the acceleration really picked up in the second half of 2020. That said, I think they're probably a few years behind Tesla from a cost perspective, from a technology perspective, from a brand awareness perspective. They have some catching up to do. There's no doubt about that. But I think they all have a little bit to offer. And I don't think everybody wants to own a Tesla. So at some point, when you get some of these brands like the Ford F-150 out there, you know, these brands appeal to people, and they will under electrical vehicles, EVs too. So I think once we get to there, they can do some catching up. But right now, they're you know, GM is probably further along. They have their own in-house battery capabilities that are developing, their own autonomous driving the cruise subsidiary. So they got a lot of really exciting things going on, and I think they're probably next in line to be closer to Tesla than maybe Ford. Ford had launched the Mustang Mach-E this January, and it's been a raging success. But they're going more of a supplier approach, where they're using battery suppliers, Google for their self-driving autonomous vehicle platform. So you do have a couple of different efforts out there and strategies out there, but they're all in this now to catch up to Tesla, and I think they're focused on it.
So you mentioned in-house battery production. Is that does that give a competitive advantage to GM over Ford, or how do you view that?
I think it does. There's a lot of people who think right now that we're going to have just like we've had a chip shortage this in the beginning of 2021, you're going to have a battery shortage when you get out to the 2024, 2025 range. And having that capability in-house would definitely be an advantage at that point. Tesla would agree with you, and Tesla takes it a step further and says, well, we want to control it because we want to be the leader in technology. So when all's said and done, the dust settles, you might find out you have plenty of battery capacity, and going with the supplier model might win out. But right now, I think the ability to control the technology and your supply is pretty crucial.
Okay.
A few years at least.
Before we wrap up here, are there any other issues that don't get the headlines that you're monitoring closely?
Well, I wouldn't say they don't get the headlines, but I would say there's a lot of interesting things going on. And I think, again, what's really accelerated over the last half of 2020 is just the fact that people are not really looking at electric vehicles as a replacement for internal combustion, but just as a new consumer product. You hear about Apple potentially launching an Apple vehicle. Google's getting involved in Waymo. And so really the legacy OEMs are really on a collision course with tech companies. And it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out, because it only takes one partnership to change overnight. And all of a sudden you might go from a legacy OEM who's way behind to immediately a big player, just on one partnership announcement. So watching that play out over the next few years is going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
It goes back to Apple. When Apple first started, did people think they're going to launch a watch?
Right.
So it's, and when Apple gets involved in a product, it's serious, seriously going to be a consumer product.
Yeah. Well, Andy, unfortunately, that's all the time we have today, but I'm sure we'll be speaking with you about this topic frequently going forward, because it touches just about every single sector out there. So thank you for your thoughts, and thanks to you, the listener, for taking the time to listen to our podcast. If you have any questions, please reach out to your portfolio manager or our marketing team at aamcompany.com. During our next podcast, I'll be joined by Marco and a member of our investment team to discuss a timely issue affecting the fixed income markets. Thank you.